it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, Chi Ekwe and Chi Amawe, Chairman Papanoidia's daughters, are kidnapped and held for ransom. Ahsoka Tano teams up with Senator Fran Pantora, Rio Tucci, to aid the new chairman in recovering his family before the Trade Federation can unduly influence the future of his planet. There will be evil goats, the return of Stinky, and George Lucas's family playing as the Blue Man Group. We're talking about Sphere of Influence this week. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good. Oh, that was supposed to be George Lucas's daughter.
I have it all in my extra information notes. But yeah, when we first saw...
That's why she looked familiar.
Chairman Papanoida was in Revenge of the Sith, mm-hmm. and he was played by George Lucas, and his daughter, Katie Skywalker, played, I think it's Chi Amawe. They're both very similar in names.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I put that all in my extra information notes about that, and Dave Filoni talked about it in the Futurette, too, so it was...
I want to watch it all over again, visualizing him as George Lucas.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Like, it was that his design, because he played it in the movie, so the design is based on George Lucas.
Well, at least the voice wasn't.
yeah, the voice wasn't. So, because he doesn't have that George Lucas voice.
Yeah, I don't think it would have worked out. Maybe it's comedy.
He's more of a Tandevo police guy kind of voice.
There's a little Alan Rickman in there.
Yeah, just a little bit. He was played by Corey Burton, who was Dooku's voice actor.
Okay.
So, okay, I'm going to not do George Lucas's voice anymore.
I thought you were just talking funny.
No, that was my George Lucas impression.
Oh, okay. Woo.
Did I do a good job?
Oh, sure. I'd recognize it anywhere.
You're so nice. Thank you for being polite.
Hey, no problem.
But first and foremost, we're going to give out a couple thank yous. So I'm going to let you thank Alan, and then I'm going to thank Gene. So you go first with Alan.
Well, every year, Dr. Alan has his yearly podcast awards, the coveted Dr. Alan Middleton podcast awards. And this marks the second year that a Two True Freaks podcast has been in the best new podcast of the year. And this year it was J-Guys and Jedi was runner up for best podcast of the year. Best new podcast of the year, I should say.
Woo-hoo!
Yep. So, just an extra sheen of class.
Yeah. So we just wanted to say thank you so much, Alan. That, like, really means a lot to us. This is something we're both passionate about, and we both love it so much. And we're glad that you're loving it, too. But it really just means a lot to us. Thank you so much.
And we know somebody's listening.
I know, right? And then I wanted to give a very special thank you, because today I went to go take my dog outside, and I saw that I had a package on my porch. And I looked at it, and I was just like, what did I order? And so I brought it inside, and I was like, I didn't order anything recently. And so I opened it up, and there's a little white teddy bear wearing a little t-shirt. And on the t-shirt, it has the J-Guys and Jedi logo on it. And it's really cute. And it turns out that it was from Gene the Podcast Machine. And he wrote me a note that said, here's something to keep you company when I'm writing my novel, because I'm working on the first draft of my novel right now. And this is so sweet, Gene, because, like, we have a cafe press store, where you can pretty much get our logo on just about anything under the sun.
Let me ask you something about this bear. How's the quality of the bear?
It's really cool. It's a really good quality bear. Like, it's nice. It's about 8 inches tall. Maybe nine inches. It's not quite a foot tall. And the shirt, the little shirt thing has been ironed on. It has a little blue and red bow around the bear's neck. It's a really nice bear. It's really soft. Like, my cat laid on it, so I know it's soft. Cat was like, what is this? It's mine now. But, yeah, and it's, the logo is on there. It's very nice. It's not blurry or anything. It's a very nice quality bear, and I like it a lot. So, yeah, you can get stuff with the J-Guys and Jedi logo. You can get tote bags, shirts, hats, hoodies, tumblers, all sorts of things. So if you go to our site at 2TrueFreaks.com and go to J-Guys and Jedi, we have a link in all of our show notes that can take you to the Cafe Press store. But I just wanted to say thank you, Gene. This was really, really sweet. I wasn't expecting it. And thank you so much, and I appreciate it. So, Gene, you're the best. Thank you so much. Thank you for being a podcast machine.
Thank you for being a friend.
Podcast machine! Podcast machine! We should write an 80s ballad called Gene the Podcast Machine.
We should have a variety show where he comes out dancing and everybody throws stuffed animals at him.
Yes, we're going to do it now. It's a thing. Gene, get your dance moves ready. So, oh man, we just need a guitarist to like have like a sweet like guitar riff that's just like Gene. So.
That was almost like the end of a joke on laughing. Ba da down da down down. Gene.
Gene. That's what we should do now. All right. So, Sphere of Influence.
Oh yeah, let's talk about a show.
Yeah, Sphere of Influence. So here we go. Sphere of Influence is the 48th episode of Star Wars: The Clone Wars, and it aired on October 1st, 2010. It was written by Katie Lucas, George Lucas's daughter. Stephen Melching was supervising writer Drew Z. Greenberg, and it was directed by Kyle Dunleavy. Some extra information for you, and this is important to listen to, because this is where all my jokes from my show notes come from.
Okay.
So please pay attention. There was originally a story change made in the process of this episode. The initial story setting placed this as an episode as a prequel to Trespass from Season 1. Chi Ekwe was going to be the sister of Rio Chuchi and had been kidnapped in a plot to let the Separatists establish a base on Ordo Plutona. Chairman Chicho, who died in Trespass, would secretly aid the Separatists. Several of these scenes can be seen animated in the extra materials on Star Wars The Clone Wars Complete Season 3 Blu-ray Edition. This was later changed to the episode that it is now. Chairman Papanoida's first appearance was in Revenge of the Sith. He was played by George Lucas in that episode, but in this show, he's voiced by Corey Burton instead, but his design is still based on George Lucas. The Papanoida was sworn into office of Pantora after Chairman Chicho's death back in Season 1 episode of Trespass, so he's brand new in this position. Seth Green, who voiced Cad Bane's droid Toto, returns to voice his second character of Clone Wars. He voices Ion Papanoida, the son of the chairman. Ion Papanoida's design was based off of George Lucas's son, Jet Lucas. Chi Ekwe Papanoida is the daughter of the chairman. Her first appearance was in the hallway during Revenge of the Sith. She would eventually become the Senator of Pantora. Chi Ekwe was played by Katie Lucas in Revenge of the Sith, and Katie was the writer for this episode. Chi Amawe was based on George Lucas's other daughter, Amanda Lucas. Rhodo the Hutt, aka Stinky, makes his second and final appearance in Clone Wars since the Clone Wars theatrical film. This episode also has the return of Police Chief Devo. In the episode featurette, Dave Filoni said, "In Sphere of Influence, there are a lot of crazy things going on. Not the least of it is that my boss, George Lucas, is running around and shooting up a cantina. There are several things that you think you're never going to do, see, or hear when you're in your career. I never thought I would work on Star Wars. I never thought I would release a Star Wars theatrical film. I certainly never thought that I would be responsible for animating George Lucas. But rather than get into that, I'm going to get into the cantina. We were tasked with recreating a very classic set. The first thing you realize about a lot of the A New Hope sets is how sparse they really are. For our show, which is stylized, a sparse set can be very tricky. It can make it look very empty. So it's a challenge. We had to make these stools. There's the booth that Han Solo sat in with Greedo later. Obviously, Greedo is a regular there in his youth. Also, we rationalized that the same owner probably didn't have it. So we created a bartender for our cantina. I think that this guy is so traumatized by the shootout that he puts the cantina up for sale. Bye-bye. So yeah, pretty much all, like, there's, since Chi Amawe and Chi Ekwe's voice are names are so similar, I just start calling them Katie and Amanda in my show notes. Because their names are Chi and Che. Chi and Che. Chi and Chong. It's like the return of Chi and Chong. Yeah, Chi and Che. So I just called them Katie and Amanda in the show notes because it was so difficult. I was
I'm
like,
I'm going to call them Chi and Chong. Hey, man.
But we already got Chi and Chong because that was in Trespass.
Oh,
it was,
that's
it
right.
Was, yeah, it was Chairman Chicho because it was Chairman Chicho and Ryo Chuchi.
Oh, Jesus.
I know. See why I call them Amanda and Katie? Oh, these girls and their difficult names. So it was either that or read out their full names every time I got to it. And I was just like,
not
I'm not
this
doing
episode.
That.
This one's just tongue twister after tongue twister.
You know who also likes to twist tongues with people?
Oh, back I am.
This one's good. Guys, I sent this space platitude to Chris last night, and he just sent me back, like, a line of explanation this, points.
This is the one that might get Yoda in space jail.
This is... Okay, so, what is the space platitude for Yoda this week?
Oh, a child stolen is hope lost. In bed.
Ugh, it's so gross.
Yoda's going to take a long shower now.
Ugh, it's jailbait.
Oh.
Stay away from the Padawans.
Oh, on Dagobah, what happens on Dagobah stays.
Oh, God. Oh, my face hurts.
Backing up slowly.
Get back in the corner, Yoda. Get over there. We'll see you next week.
Ah, great.
Yeah, like, seriously, like, when I saw this last night, I was just like, oh, that's almost as bad as the Boba Fett one from last season.
Can we not call the chairman of Pantora the chairman of Pantora? Can we call him the night manager of Panera?
I just started calling him George Lucas.
I call him Blue Kenny Rogers.
Oh my god, he looks like Kenny Rogers. A little bit. Oh my god, I can see it. Ugh. Yeah, we're going to have so many nicknames for this episode. If I don't call him Chairman, I just called him...
If you Google Blue Kenny Rogers, comes up with Dolly Parton.
Really? Blue Kenny Rogers.
No, it's a joke, Hope. It's a dirty, dirty joke. You'd have to spell blue wrong.
Oh, okay. Well, I did
Come
not
on,
spell blue
class
wrong.
It up.
And the first thing I got was Blue Skies by Willie Nelson and Kenny Rogers.
Yeah, no. I don't know how you do that.
I guess I'm too young for this joke.
You're just too nice for this joke, Hope. That's all. Chris Aww. Tyler's out there laughing.
Oh, well, I'll take the compliment, thanks. I try to be nice. I don't like being a dick. Hey, speaking of Dildos...
You see, you can even say dick and not even know that was a dick joke.
Was it a dick joke?
Blue Kenny Rogers, Dolly Parton.
I don't get it!
You would have to... Oh, jeez. I'm sorry, listeners, that I have to explain this, but we're gonna have to do this.
Okay.
You see, the person... Blue Kenny Rogers, it was, what is it? What are two words that are spelled differently but sound the same?
Okay.
My brain keeps wanting to say synonyms, but they're not synonyms. Anyway. Say you did a Google search for Blue Kenny Rogers... but you spelled blue B-L-E-W.
I get it now.
Islands in the stream.
Yay, I like it.
Wow, that was some hard work to the end of that joke, Hope. I'm sorry.
Shut up, I really
it was a long path to the payoff of that one.
Well, if it makes you feel better, in the third sentence of Act 1, I mentioned dildos and dicks.
Excellent, so. Excellent. Okay, I don't feel so bad.
Okay, so, Act 1.
Right, remember, Night Manager Pantera. A Panera.
Oh my god, okay.
Makes a mean sandwich.
Act 1, the new Night Manager of Panera. I don't know if I can do this. Okay. So, Act 1. The new night manager of Panera is having a bad day. More of a bad week. Because the Trade Federation owns the market for dildos because they're a bunch of dicks. And they set up a blockade around the planet of Pandora and cut them off from the Republic aid. People are starting to get pissed off with the Republic's lack of help. But wait, there's more. Count Dooku is all like, hey, little blue people, you should come to the Separatists. We have cookies. Night Manager Papanoida sends... Night Manager Papanoida sends one of my favorite queens, Senator Rio Chuchi, to ask the Senate to help for this matter. This was all in the first minute, so there's a lot to this one. Rio got her big girl panties on and called out the Republic for bullshit. She flat out tells the Senate that this is a separatist ploy, but the Trade Federation is like, Pantora owes us money, so we're just going to throw out some bullshit politics treaty, because it's the Treaty of 16 whatever, and just to show that we're neutral. And Rio is like, that's the biggest load of crap. Please, we need help. And Padme is moved by my paraphrasing of Rio's speech. She approaches Rio afterwards and gives her support in the matter. She also presses her not to let the Separatists take Pantora. And Rio is like, we'll never bow to that evil. Rio goes with the night manager of Panera, who introduces his family, Amanda, Katie, and Jet. I mean, Chi Ekwe, Chi Amawe, and Ion. Katie and Amanda leave to set up a very convenient plot point in that moment. Ion informs Rio that things are getting worse on Pantora, and the people are like, huh, the Separatists do have cookies. Maybe we should think about joining them. Rio is strongly against this, and while the wheels of democracy are moving far slower than the Separatist plot, she asks them for more time. Because the names are super similar, I'm just going to call them Katie and Amanda forever. Katie and Amanda return home to the lights in their apartment not working. Amanda is like, oh, it's nothing. It just means that there's always something terrible about to happen, but we're just going to ignore that the lights aren't working. Something grabs Katie in the dark. Amanda picks up a relic thing from their table and falters when she hears evil goat laughter. Yes, I did just say evil goat laughter. Bounty hunters Greedo and Goatman grabs the girls and kidnaps them. Since Goatman doesn't actually have a canon name, he's only listed as his species, which is the Goatle. I'm just going to call him Goatman for the rest of this. So also, Greedo and Goatman sounds like a really awesome buddy cop show. That was Act 1.
I called him Goatman in my notes, too.
All right, good, good. Because he doesn't have a name. I was trying to find his name, and it was like, Goatle, species, Goatle. And I was just like, that's not right. So I went to
wasn't that what they called the guy from Saturday Night Live? Didn't he have a character that was like, or I think that was Goat Boy. But this guy is obviously Goat Man because he's got a beard.
Yeah, but like, his name was Goatle, but that's also the name of his species, and they didn't actually give him a name. So I just called him Goat Man.
Yeah, basically he'd be just like human or whatever.
Yeah, I actually have trouble taking him seriously because the way he talks, I just keep laughing at it. He doesn't sound very threatening when he's just like, pay up. You're gonna die! And I'm just like, I can't take you seriously when you sound like that. So, yeah.
My first thought was...
Did any of Act 1 make sense? I know that I'm reading it, I was just like, wow, that's a mess. But this episode's kind of a mess.
My first thought was, oh good, more politics. And it's weird because it seems like with Clone Wars, a lot of times they like to do runs of politics shows.
They do. We're gonna get a lot of those because we're also about to go back to Mandalore for some politics.
But then there was an interesting first, and I think only in all of Star Wars. Now, granted, I don't read EU books, so maybe this happened in EU books, but in all of like comics and movies that I've ever seen of Star Wars, I've never heard anybody mention a year. You know,
yeah.
Just the Dark Times or the Clone Wars or something. This had the Treaty of 1647 in it.
Yeah, and I looked up that treaty, and all it is was like, this was a treaty made a while ago and used by the Trade Federation in the episode Sphere of Influence. And I was like, okay. But pretty much what it is that it means that the Trade Federation can pretty much be neutral and sell to anybody. So when the Clone Wars started, it's what allows them to sell to both the Republic and the Separatists at the same time. That's what the basis of the treaty was. That Wikipedia told me.
I just was very shocked that there was an actual year attached, you know, that it was given a year, you know, instead of, you'd think they would, you know, call it the, you know, the treaty of whatever planet it was signed on or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Which is
that's true. I can't recall them ever using a year in anything.
No.
Because, you know, like they have like the Battle of Yavin is 0 BB. That is the 0 year, and then everything after that is like after Yavin. Or maybe it's Endor. Maybe it's Battle of Endor. But either way, it's like Christ came and it's Luke Skywalker and they start over the time. Christ, Luke Skywalker came and that's when the 0 year occurred. So it's whatever battles in A New Hope, but yeah, that's true. Like they don't usually have years. So
yeah, I didn't find it as much confusing as just kind of like, I know this setup, you know, it's very just sort of like, okay, here's what's going on. Here's what's going in the Senate. I think the politics in this one are going a little more, they're a little less muddled and, boring is maybe the last episode.
See, yeah, I
they make a little more sense, I guess.
I kind of liked it in the last episode, though, because it, like, very directly affected the front lines. Like, if we can't get this passed, you know, Ryloth's gone. Like, we lose Ryloth if we don't get this done. So I actually think it worked better last episode than the politics of this episode. I just think that last episode was... Both are slow. And I like when Clone Wars does politics, but both politics and the last couple episodes have been really slow. It's not working well at all. It's not like in Mandalore where, like, Mandalore's like, we're neutral, leave us the fuck alone. Okay, they're not leaving us the fuck alone. Satine's gonna go to the Senate. Like, at least, like, that I feel like made sense because it was interworked between three arcs and stuff, and it was, like, all... I think that's the difference. Like, the thing with Mandalore last season, it was three episodes of politics, but it was spread out. The last two episodes, they're trying to cram all this in 22 minutes.
Right.
And it's a very small time to cram, like, an entire planet's worth of politics in. While with Mandalore, it was spread out, and so Satine was able to, like, introduce a little bit at a time, and you could see how, like, Palpatine was working against her and, like, trying to get Mandalore, but it didn't work out. So, like, it worked because it was three episodes worth. It was an hour's worth of politics. This is an hour's worth of politics in 22 minutes.
Right. And it's... Not as much. I mean, you know, when it gets going, our only main character is Ahsoka in it. So you're introducing a lot of characters too, with similar sounding names, and so yeah, it's just it's kind of going nuts.
And I mentioned this later in my notes. Like, even Ahsoka is not even the main player. Like, it's following the majority of this episode is like George Lucas and his son.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even, like, all about Ahsoka. And so, like, I mentioned this in my episode recap. I want to like this episode so much, but I struggle with this episode a lot. So...
Yeah, that's the only... I had some more notes, but I think we have a different cut. I think my other notes I have in here fall into Act 2.
It's okay. I had trouble with the acts on this one, too. This was kind of like a four-act one.
Yeah.
So, Act 2 was massive. One note that I didn't put in here, I just want to say, Katie and Amanda are dumb. They watch into their apartment. They're like, "Oh, the lights turn on. Don't turn on. This is normal."
Yeah, they're you know, they're privileged, you know, kids, diplomats, kids. You know, they're I guess they're not used to being in danger.
Yeah, and I'm just sitting here going, "The lights don't turn on. And you think that's okay? That's not normal. Get
it's a little
out."
Suspicious. Usually you would have. Usually they would have some sort of security at their disposal, you know, or to guard their door or something. You would think with foreign diplomats and stuff like that.
Yeah, but from what I gather, I think they all, like, live in, like, one building.
Uh-huh.
Or, like, they look like they lived in some, like, high-rise apartment building.
Yeah, so well, it ain't the most secure building if Greedo and the Goat Man got in.
I just love that.
Pick the door with their credit card.
Gene needs to come out with a guitar and sing a song called Greedo and the Goat Man for, like, a TV theme show. It's a TV theme show of Greedo and the Goat Man. I love it.
Good children's book, too.
It would be. My only other note is I'm just so proud of my girl, Ryo Chuchi. Like, if you remember my episode from Trespass, like, she's one of my favorite characters of Star Wars. Like, I love her. And she's really grown up since Trespass. Because actually, Chris, I remember you saying that she was, like, really, like, super young and inexperienced, and I agreed. Like, that was probably, like, one of her first missions. And she spent the entire episode of Trespass relying on everybody else. Like, she would be, like, listening to the Chairman Chachi, and she would go to the Jedi, and, like she never did anything. It was finally at the end that she kind of stood on her own two feet, and she found her voice. And now here we have Ryo standing on her own two feet. And she's calling out the Trade Federation for their bullshit. And she's making sure that her chairman's fighting for her people. Like, she went to the chairman and she was like, "Look, this is what I need you to do. We gotta do this or we're gonna be fucked by the Separatists." And they were just like, "Yep, that's exactly what we're gonna do. Go get it, girl." So I'm just, like, really so proud how far my little young senator has come since season one. And she's, like, it's like night and day. Like, she has so much more experience under her belt. She clearly knows what's going on. When before she was, like, kind of naive and quiet and unsure. And now she's just getting it. She's getting in people's faces. And she's like, "That's bullshit. Sit your ass down. And you're going to listen to me." And so I really am so happy to see how far Ryo has come. Like, I love this character so much. So, yeah, and that's all I have for Act One.
All right, well, maybe we'll get to some of my notes now.
Yeah. So, Act 2. Anakin is escorting Padme to her ship when Ahsoka finally joins Season 3. Hey, Ahsoka, welcome to the Season 3 party. She tells them that the Pantoran daughters have been kidnapped. Anakin says that the Jedi can't get involved and the police will have to handle it. Padme fears that they won't be able to find the girls fast enough. Ahsoka volunteers to find the girls with Ryo's help since she's really good friends with Ryo. Anakin is like, "So, here's the plan. I'm gonna go to the Jedi Council and do this little dance to make sure that they don't get in the way and they don't find out what's happening. Ahsoka, you're gonna be a secret agent. Don't let people know that you're a Jedi. Don't get in the way of the police. We'll keep this all hush-hush, we'll break some rules, and then we're gonna party afterwards." And Padme, Anakin, and Ahsoka have a bro high-five and execute their plan. Ahsoka meets up with the Blue Man Group, and everyone can tell that it's a really poor plot by Count Dooku to get Pantora to join the Separatists. But they can't ignore it as long as the girls are missing. So they split up. Ahsoka and Ryo will go to the Trade Federation ship to look for the girls there, while the Chairman and Ion will follow up with the police. Enter our favorite space cop, Mr. SpongeBob himself, Tandivo. He didn't find anything in the apartment, but he doesn't know Pantoran customs. The chairman realizes that one of their religious icons is on the table and not with the shrine with the other people. There's blood on the bottom of the icon, and the men are just like, "Ew, gross." The night manager scans the blood and discovers it belongs to Greedo, who's based on Tatooine. The night manager does more in 30 seconds than Tandivo did in his entire search. Good job, Devo. Good job. Father and son whip on their shades, get in their space car, and head to Tatooine. Meanwhile, Ahsoka and Ryo arrive on the Trade Federation ship. They throw some politics back and forth like, "Oh hey, we'll join the Separatists if you lift the blockade." And the Nemoidians are like, "Oh, that's nice, but thanks. We'll have to saw the Republican stuff, and the Nemoidian administrator, Sib Kinney, welcomes them as guests on his ship. Night manager George Lucas and his son Seth Green arrive at Jabba the Hutt's palace. Jabba is watching his son Rhoda, aka Stinky, play with his food, and Jabba loves his little ball of gross. The night manager doesn't want to go to Jabba directly, since he's not sure that if Jabba helped with the kidnapping. So they go to a group of Twi'lek women asking for Greedo, saying that they need a bounty hunter. One lady, Trella, says she'll let Greedo know that they're looking for her. She's also romantically involved with Greedo, and she kind of looks like she's done some heavy drugs in her life, so there's that. George Lucas and Seth Green wait to see what Trella does. Trella warns Greedo that the Pantorans are looking for him, and Greedo needs to settle things more permanently. Greedo points a blaster at the chairman, and George Lucas is too quick for him. He puts Greedo in a chokehold, but Ion gets a steel chair in the head in this death cage match. Okay, I'm just kidding, but one of the bounty hunters does grab Ion by the blaster point. George Lucas wants to talk to Jabba about this mess. On the Separatist ship, Ahsoka and Rio listen in on Sib Kinney's conversation. They hide under a table and overhear that Sib has the daughters on the ship with him. Rio gasps, drawing the attention of the men. They look under the table. No women. They stand up. No women. They look behind the wall. No women. Ahsoka is poised up in the rafters and holding Rio in the air using the Force. The Nemoidians leave, and the women set out to look for Katie and Amanda on the ship. They head to the detention level. Ahsoka tries the Jedi mind trick on the guard, and it sort of works, but half fails. She's able to pass, but forgets to let Rio pass too. On her second attempt, Ahsoka mind tricks the guard to let both women go by into the detention block. While searching, Sib Kinney's battle droids pick up the women as intruders. On Tatooine, Jabba the Hutt is like, "What the hell is happening in my bar? I didn't ask for the Blue Man Group to play here today." George Lucas points right ahead at his son Stinky and is like, "Look at your child. Feel your fatherhood. My daughters are gone. And I know from watching the Clone Wars movie that you will do anything to get your kid back. Your dude Greedo got my babies. And you and I are our gal pals, Jabba. You will never betray me." And Jabba's like, "Well, just cut up Greedo so we can get a blood sample. If it matches the scene of the crime, he's all yours." Greedo comes clean and says that he was with the Separatists. He says one girl is in the cantina on Tatooine while the other is with the Trade Federation. Ugh. There was a few times in this episode I just went, "Shut up, Ion." God.
I like where Anakin and Ahsoka are like, "Oh yeah, we lie to the Jedi Council all the time. Don't worry about it."
I know! That's like one of my favorite parts. And they're just like, "Well, I guess we're lying to the Jedi again."
Again.
Not our marriage, though. They don't know about that, ever. Though I have to say,
exactly.
I realized while we're talking about this, I realized something I never realized before. And this is why I think Rex knows that there's something going on between Anakin and Padme. Because in that scene, Rex is standing right behind Anakin the entire time, and he's talking with his wife about how nice it was that they met each other, and she calls him Annie right in front of Rex.
Right.
And they're not being subtle at all. And so, like, I'm sitting here going, how does Rex not know that you're married? Because he's literally standing behind them the entire time. And they're being so domestic. And so I never realized that Rex was, like, right there ever before. So I was just like, hey, Rex probably knows you're married. So
I like how they did with the Stinky don't play with your food joke without any subtitles, but you knew Jabba just told him not to play with his food. Stop playing with your food.
You know, I really want to know what happened to Stinky. And I actually wrote Pablo Hidalgo a tweet about it today, and I haven't heard back from him about it. But, like, this is his last appearance. Like, there's no mention. Like, I think he's mentioned in one other episode later on in, like, season 3 or season 4. He's mentioned in another episode. And that's it. And he's off in college
during Return of the Jedi.
I guess so, because he's not in any of the original trilogies. He hasn't showed up in Rebels. So I kind of want to know what happened to Jabba the Hutt's son. Like, I feel like that's a big deal that, like, Han Solo. What if he's in the Han Solo movie?
Jesus. Yeah, that's very likely.
Depending on imagine when the Han Solo movie is set, we might have, like, his son show up, and maybe he's the villain. He's like, I'm Rhoda the Hutt! Oh, man.
Well, no, wouldn't the timing, it would be, he would just be, like, he would still be a little stinky, like, probably for the Han Solo movie. Yeah, no, he'd probably be, like, 10 years, but who knows how fast Hutt's age, too, because Jabba the Hutt seemed to, you know, be around for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, this is Clone Wars.
So, and then about might 20... be a little baby for, like, 20 years or so, for all we know, you know?
Yeah, or maybe they have, like, really fast childhoods and teenage years, and then they're adults forever.
Maybe it just depends on how much you feed them.
That's true. Like, let's see, 20 years from Clone Wars to... Actually, no, Jabba's around in the original trilogy, isn't he?
Yeah.
Or in the prequel.
He's in the prequel and he dies by Princess Leia in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, so from Phantom Menace to Clone Wars, Anakin's what, like in his 20s? So that's probably 10 years right there. Another 20 years to all original trilogies. Yeah. So that's 30 years right there of Jabba the Hutt. So, yeah, like, that's why I want to know where Stinky went. Like, he just vanishes after this episode. And he's gone.
Not the most popular character in the world.
I don't know. I still kind of want the Stinky backpack that you mentioned in our Clone Wars movie.
Yes.
Recap.
It's funny that... Why does Greedo speak English?
I don't know.
He speaks English. It's interesting that the voice actor who does it and the way he does his... lines are like the way are sort of with the same, you know, sort of clip that Greedo used in Star Wars, but he's speaking English so that doesn't make sense, because Greedo could have just spoke English to Han Solo, you know.
That's true.
So it was weird. I know they did it just to make it easier, and that they knew there would be kids who didn't want to read, you know, why give them more subtitles to read.
No, I will say, for the Netflix, I was watching it on Netflix, and I always put on the subtitles so I know how to spell stuff. And they had subtitles for what Jabba was saying, but they had spelled out what they were saying. So it was like, cheek equal,
Prashashka. Yeah.
They spelled out all those words, and I was like, wow, someone had to do that. Someone got paid to write out Jabba the Hutt's speeches for him. But it wasn't translated. It was just like, chi equi peshwapa.
I've noticed in Clone Wars, the Nemoidians' mouths are way grosser than they are in the prequels. Their mouths are almost more insect-like in Clone Wars. Just, I don't know, they're creepier when they talk in Clone Wars for some reason.
Maybe it's just because of the last two episodes, but we've had a lot of Nemoidians this season.
Yeah, and they had a lot of, and you got to see a lot of different, now you get to see, like, different Nemoidian body types, and you get to see tall, skinny ones, and, you know, lumpier ones and stuff, so that was kind of cool.
Is it racist to say that they all look the same to me?
They all sound the same.
I know. There's, like, no difference. Like,
yeah.
It took me a moment to realize it was Lot Dodd talking in the final scene and not, like, another one. And half the time I thought the administrator that comes in the last scene was the same as, like, Sib Kinnae. And they all talk the same, even though they all have different voice actors. They all sound exactly the same. And they all, like, I'm having trouble, like, telling them apart because I had no idea. I mean, at least with the clones, it makes sense that when you have trouble, because they all look the same and they're all voiced by the same guy. But at least, like, if they all talk differently, please, like, make them drastically sound different.
Right. But that's about all the notes I had. It was a little weird to see Nemoidian, like, guards and stuff. I just don't expect them to do anything physical.
Yeah. Hey, have we ever seen a girl Nemoidian?
I don't think so. Well, maybe. There was it's hard to tell in Phantom Menace, there's one that definitely has a female voice in the very beginning, and she's sitting at a control panel, you know, so you can't see if there's any breasts or anything, or if Nemoidians even have breasts. They just might have, like, a row of nipples, you know. down their chest. They might, you know.
like a pig.
Yeah, like a pig or an alligator or whatever,
like,
you know.
Like a kitty.
But definitely has a female voice actor doing the voice. So, I mean, Yeah, I don't know. They might just split down the middle and form two Nemoidians every once in a while, you know, for all we know.
Huh. Well, I have a... This is where the bulk of my notes are, so... This is what I kind of wish I got to see. Ahsoka tells the audience that she's really good friends with Rio Chuchi, but this is the first episode that we've ever seen them together. And as an audience member, we have no background of these two characters. So I want to know, like, how did they meet? When did they work together? I mean, it's basic storytelling to show, not tell. And we're being told information that hasn't been shown up to this point. Like, this would have worked well if Ahsoka was with them in Trespass, but Ahsoka wasn't there in that episode. Or if we had another episode before this of Rio and Ahsoka in it, like, where they had another mission and that's how they met and became friends. But this is the first time we've ever seen these two characters together. So that just does not work here story-wise, because we just have to believe that they know each other and believe that they gotten together or were gal pals or something. But we have nothing to go on other than going, okay, well, I guess they're friends. So, like, that just did not work to me. I wasn't sure about this because, like, we know that there's all this news going on. They have the HoloNet news and we have all this propaganda stuff that, like, Palpatine is pushing out about the right, Jedi and stuff like that. So I'm wondering how recognizable individual Jedi are, and how recognizable they are to other people, or if people are just now starting to recognize them. Because it makes sense that the Trade Federation guys didn't recognize Ahsoka when she was in her cloak with Rio. But I'm wondering if they would say something like Anakin or Obi-Wan or even like Yoda.
I don't know. Maybe anybody that's not a Nemoidian all looks the same to them.
Yeah, but I'm just talking more in general. Like we always have our Jedi in cloaks and people are just like, oh, hello there, stranger. But I'm wondering, like, as this war goes along, if, like, Palpatine starts, like, featuring, like, Anakin Skywalker did this today, and Obi-Wan Kenobi saved Ryloth, blah, blah, blah. I'm wondering if people are going to start, like, recognizing them, so, like, that little cloak trick's not going to start working in the future. That would be a really cool thing to see, where he, like, Palpatine's purposely pushing their faces out there to kind of out them and get people to recognize them. So, say, like, what if they failed a mission, and Palpatine's like, oh... Kit Fisto here failed today, and then Kit Fisto goes out and people are just like, boo, Kit Fisto, you failed. Like, I think that'd be a really cool thing if they started doing it. But in this scene, I can understand why people wouldn't recognize Ahsoka.
I don't think the Jedi would be into being on the news or interviewed or anything like that.
But in this kind of government, like with Palpatine pushing out like war, like propaganda against them to try to make people distrust them, would they have much of a thing to say?
Would they have
a say in that matter? Okay. So I have a couple of big problems with the whole. It's a problem and things I like about the scene too. The scene where the women are hiding under the table from the Nemoidians.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work because one of the Nemoidians are standing up and the other one bends down. But like when the girls escape from under the table, the guy standing up should have saw them. And all they have to do is turn their look up in the air and they would see Rio, like, floating in the air. Like even then, looking straight ahead from sitting at my desk, I can see my ceiling in my peripheral vision. And I have a very high ceiling, and I can still see my ceiling.
Right.
So, like, that's just very lazy writing.
Yeah, it was. They just relied on... That scene's been played before with different characters in different movies, and so they just play on you depending on, like... Oh, whatever the Jedi did, it was super Jedi, you know, whatever they did, it was super slick, because look, now you don't see them, and it's a cheap trick.
Yeah, and I've always had problems with that scene. Like, they should have got Saul, or at least have both men bend down, because if both men, that could have fixed everything. If both of them looked under the table and saw nothing, that would have been plenty of time for the girls to get out. But right. No, like, one's standing, it doesn't work. But one thing I do like is the scene where Ahsoka is holding Rio in the air, and I also like her Jedi mind trick scene. And the reason I like those scenes is it shows that Ahsoka is still learning the Force. Like, she's struggling to hold Rio up, and she has never... This is her first time using the Jedi mind trick on somebody that's not in practice, and she's like, I've never done this before, let's see. So I really like that scene because... she's a Padawan, and she's still learning. And I like to see that her abilities are progressing. And I think that's something that started really well in Rebels, but they haven't quite continued it with Ezra, because this is season 3, and Ahsoka is still learning. Ezra's in season 3, and he's just like, I know how to do fucking everything, because I'm a special snowflake. And that's still something that really bothers me about Ezra, is that I think they do so much better with Ahsoka showing her learning throughout the years, opposed to Ezra, who just, he struggled with the Jedi and the Force in season 1, and that's really good. Because he couldn't get it. And they kind of did it to a little bit in season 2. He had difficulty connecting with certain animals. Like the spiders, he couldn't connect to them. Until Kanan showed him how to do it in season 3. So they're still kind of doing it. But outside like these tiny things here and there, pretty much they're like, Ezra fucking knows everything about the Force. He's perfect. And I disagree. Ezra is just a freaking blue snowflake. And so I like that with Ahsoka, we're still seeing her struggle. We see so she's still a student, and she's not a Jedi Master. So I think that's a really, really, really good scene, because, I mean, she's not Anakin or Obi-Wan. She's still learning, and that's a really good scene right there.
Yeah. I like that she had to, like, she got through the first time, and the second one, after he had a little time to recover, it was harder for him to push him through, you know, push him into letting her through. And,
yeah,
you know, and it was maybe because she's not as experienced, but it's also like you should probably only do it once, you know. If you keep doing it, you're pushing your luck, and you know eventually their brain's still working on sort of like, hey, wait a minute. So I thought that was a really neat scene too.
Yeah, and my only other thing is I really like the chairman in this episode, and I kind of wish Bail Organa was written more like him, because compared to the chairman this week and Bail Organa last week. They're two different kinds of Senate people, and I think the chairman is way smarter and more action based than Bail is, because we even got that episode last season where Bail and Padme had an episode together, and Pat and Bail was shitty with a blaster.
Well, that's what I kind of like about him. He's a big guy. He's Jimmy Smits, who usually plays action packed guys, but he's kind of a political person than he is a fighter, you know. He's got strong convictions, but like, you know, in Revenge of the Sith, when he pulls up and sees a kid get shot down, he's just like, all right, see you later.
Yeah. But I thought the chairman was really smart, especially like when he appealed to Jabba's dad's side.
Yeah.
Because that's also a side of Jabba the Hutt we don't always get to see, is him being a father. And so I actually really like those scenes, like where like Stinky is playing with his bug. Like that's a side of Jabba we don't always get to see. And I thought that was a very smart move on the chairman's part, try to be like, Jabba, you're a dad, I'm a dad, and I know for a fact that you would do anything to get your kid back, and that's what I'm trying to do. And Jabba was down for that. Like I thought that was a really like good sequence of episode like episodes. I thought that was a really good sequence there.
Yeah.
So, but. That's all I had for Act 2.
I liked how Jabba was animated. I like his stylization. He's weird. It's weird. He's very brown. But I like the stylization of Jabba and the way, like, his mouth worked and everything. It's fun.
Yeah. They did a really good job with his scene. Like, I didn't really mention, like, any of, like, the Twi'leks or the other, like, people or bounty hunters in it. But I like that there's, like, different doors and, like, different things. And not every Twi'lek woman's a slave dancer. And Greedo's girlfriend looks rough. But, I mean, rough as, like, she's probably done some drugs in her time.
Yeah, that's probably how you end up making out with Greedo.
Yeah, that was a weird kiss. Like, his tiny little lips were just like... And she's like, Greedo, baby. And she has this like big mouth and he has tiny little lips.
Yeah.
It was kind of gross.
Yeah, let's move beyond that.
So, like I was saying, I like that they in Clone Wars like mixed species. Like we always see like different species being like dating. That's kind of cool.
I guess we do. I guess they don't show many like half species though.
Yeah, so I think we talked about it before. Like we don't know if like different species can mix, but like we've seen that a few times now, like different species dating. I mean, Mittenhands of Vagina Ice was the same way. Like she was dating a different species.
anything goes in a galaxy far, far away, dude.
Yeah, that's really cool. Now I think about it, like they're totally down with mixing species, and like Aura Scene and Sing and Hondo, they were dating. Like that was really cool. So, yeah. All right, Act Three.
Act Three.
All right, Act Three. Can I also say that Ion is like the most Star Wars name ever? I kept thinking that. I was like, this is such a Star Wars name. It's not even Ian, it's Ion. So, Act 3. Ion and George Lucas arrive with Greedo at Mos Eisley and head into the cantina from A New Hope. Goatman is like, bah, why are you here, Greedo? And Greedo says that New Gunray contacted him to move the prisoners. Goatman is like, then why are the Pantorans here? And the bar owner is like, well, it's time to hide. And he ducks below his bar. They bring out Katie Lucas, and she blows everyone's cover by going, Daddy! Oh my god, Daddy! You're here, Daddy! That's the chairman of Pantora! Daddy! Hi, Daddy! Hi! I'm here! Dad! And Ion and George Lucas are both like, well, fuck. And a shootout erupts in the cantina. Team Pantora kicks some major ass in this bar. They're able to take out all the hostiles all by themselves, and even Amanda shoots Goatman and to end the fight. So don't mess with George Lucas and his blue family, because they will fuck you up. Back on the Trade Federation ship, Rio and Ahsoka find Amanda, or Katie, whatever, they're both blue, with the battle droids and free her. The women are met by Sib Kinnae and his pack of super commando droids. The droids are no match for Ahsoka, who quickly takes them out with all on her own. Anakin would be proud. Holding Sib Kinnae at lightsaber point, a group of Nemoidian guards rush in. The ambassador for the Trade Federation is like, the fuck is going on here? When he realizes that Sib Kinnae, what Sib Kinnae has done, he's like, dude, you can't fucking do this, bro. We're businessmen, not kidnappers. What the hell, dude? Rio gets right in his face and says, you're dealing in war profiteering because here's the chairman's daughter. Oh, wait, you told me that you didn't have her, but here she is, motherfucker. Pantora is going to know all about this, asshole. While we might get and understand why you did it, I doubt that the big bad Senate would understand. That might be bad for your business, sweetheart. I would hate for you to lose so much money. So here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna let us pass, and you're gonna let us leave, and you're going to lift your blockade on my planet, or I will personally fuck up your day. Are we clear, jerk? And Rio drops the mic, and the women leave the ship unharmed. Back on Coruscant, the Nemoidian Senator Lot Dodd announces to the Senate that, oh, hey, it was Sib Kinnae, not the Trade Federation, just to be clear, that kidnapped the girls. We're going to play nice with Pantora, and we're going to let them trade again. Our blockade is leaving, and the Lucas family has won the day. The end.
Goatman! Goatman's ridiculous.
He's so ridiculous. Like, I cannot take that character seriously. He's, like, not threatening at all. Like, when he started, like, evil
goat. It's the goat
laughing.
Voice that makes, yeah, the goat, and, yeah, it's, yeah.
Like, in the apartment when he's laughing in the dark, I just bursted up laughing, because I was like, that's the least scariest sound in the world. I think a lot of it is, I love goats.
It's like Bert laughing from Sesame Street.
Yeah, and, like, like, my best friend used to have goats, and, like, whenever I went to her house, I would just play with her goats. And, like, baby goats are just, like, the cutest.
They're a riot, things. Yeah.
I love goats, so I just, like, when I saw him, I was just like, ah, goat! And then he talked, and I was just like, ugh, goat man.
Yeah, he's kind of creepy. I like the, it's not blackmail, it's business line.
Oh, God, Rio's so good in that scene.
I thought that was a really good line.
She is just, I love that entire end scene. Like, I already, like, said how much, like, Rio has grown since Trespass, and that just, like, was, like, the cherry on top. Like, that's just such a good scene. She's just like, ah, oh, honey, you're not going to do this. I'm going to fuck up your day if you do. And he's just like, oh, shit.
See, I think George Lucas got, when we get into the politics parts and stuff like this, I think he took a lot of this. I'm reading a book on World War II now, and there's a lot of stuff that remind me of the prequels, you know, story elements of of things that, you know, Sidious did. And there's his name isn't General Grievous, but his name is General Gasevis. It's just a couple letters different. You just have to change one letter to an R and you'd have General Grievous. So I think he was probably reading some World War II books or using them as references to get ideas for a lot of this stuff. And I mean, if any episode has Lucas fingerprints all over it excessively, I mean, it's Star Wars, it all does, it would be this episode.
Yeah.
Seems how it has him, his daughter, his son, and his daughter wrote it.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing. Like, I think Katie had, like, a lot of, like, say in this episode. And it kind of makes sense that Katie, like, wrote this episode, too, since, like, that was the character that she played in Revenge of the Sith. So I think that was, like, a really cool point. She definitely had, like, a lot in this. I have a question.
Yeah?
What did Ion do in this entire episode other than complain?
Not much. He was just there to sort of learn from his dad. I think he was just there to learn lessons from his dad, to gripe. And then see, you know, then to learn a lesson from it.
Yeah.
Not like that those lessons added up to him doing anything useful.
Yeah, like, what a waste of Seth Green. Yeah. And I love Seth Green, but that he did not do
there,
very good
voice
acting in this either. Like, his accent kept changing. Like, if you listen to him at the beginning of the episode and at the end of the episode, he has two completely different accents. Like, this was such a waste of Seth Green in this. It was so bad.
I agree.
I love Seth Green too, but this was atrocious. I just have one very long note in this. So I have very mixed feelings about the plot and pace of this episode. There's a lot crammed into 22 minutes. And we have one plot with Ahsoka and Rio and another plot with Ion and the chairman. And on one hand, I would love for this entire episode to focus on Rio and Ahsoka. They could have spent the first half finding one daughter and the second half fighting to get the other daughter back. And that would have been really cool. I would have loved to have seen Rio up against Jabba the Hutt. That would have been really cool. But pacing-wise, their half of this episode is way slower. Like, it's everything on the Federation ship is so much slower. And they're just casually walking everywhere. And, like, this was, like, what drove me mad in the Bounty Hunter episodes is when there's bounty hunters and pirates about to fight, and they're just casually walking everywhere. Like, where is the rush in this episode? For the girls, at least. So it's Ion and George Lucas's side of the plot that has all the action. They're the ones in the cantina. They're the ones shooting up the place. Their story has the energy and that dynamic side of this plot. So the thing is like, I'm torn because I want this to be about the girls, but there's no action on the girls' side. So I don't think that either plot could have worked without the other, but it's so compact that there's not a lot of focus in the story in general. It's everywhere. This plot is everywhere. And in this case, I would have rather had the slower and cleaner plot with Ahsoka and Rio than have the shoot 'em up plot with the boys. This could have been a really good episode to develop Ahsoka's skills. She could have focused on, like, being a Jedi and, like, leading this mission. Because, like, we haven't had a lot of episodes where, like, Ahsoka just leads people. This could have been a good... And actually, the finale of the season is Ahsoka leading four Padawans in the Wookiee hunt. And Chewbacca is there. But Ahsoka is the head of that group. And she's the one that gets their asses out of there. So this could have been a good first step for the finale of the season. And she could have worked on her stills. She could have been on her own with Rio. She could have taken charge. But in this episode, Ahsoka really doesn't do much. Like, she's pretty much just walking along when she Jedi mind tricks a guy. So this was a big missed opportunity for Ahsoka. Like they could have done something really, really cool with her in this episode, and they just didn't do it. And the other part about this being super cram-packed, there are 22 speaking character roles in this episode. That is a character per minute. And that's a lot of people crammed into this. And the ending is just really rushed. They're just like, oh, hey, we're on the ship. Oh, we're in Coruscant. We're good. We're good now. So this is a mess of an episode. Like, it's just everywhere. And I feel like they could have done way more with Ahsoka and Rio. They could have established the friendship. This could have been where they met. Like, you know, like Ahsoka volunteered and like Rio and Ahsoka getting to know each other. And that's how they became friends instead of telling us, oh, we've been friends. No, show us their friendship of how they met and how they're getting to know each other here. That would have been a really good opportunity to do that, and it was just completely wasted.
Yeah, I think what they should have done is taken one of the last two episodes and done it as a two-parter, because they were both really rushed and crammed, packed.
I would have rather had this one as the two-parter.
Yeah, me too.
Like, this, like, as much as I fight for the last episode, because I liked it better than I thought, this would have been a much better two-parter.
Yes.
So, yeah, I just, this is such a waste. Such a waste for Ahsoka. I'm so sad. I want Ahsoka to be so good. I always want Ahsoka to be good. So, yeah. But I didn't have anything else for this one, did you?
No, I'm ready to give it my rating.
All right, so what are your final thoughts on the episode, Chris?
I thought it was very similar to the last episode, where, like, we just were saying, really rushed, a lot of stuff going on, and muddled. I think this one, I'm giving this one a 7, so I'm giving it 0.5 more than, I believe, let me look at my notes. Yeah, I think, I gave the last one a 6, so this one gets a full point more than last time. But I even though it's similar, the story in this one worked better for me, and the visuals, at least on the Nemoidian part, had a little more cohesiveness, and it had similar pacing problems, and they're very similar in the category of Clone Wars political episodes. So yeah, 7. Not a terrible episode. I enjoyed it. I thought it was okay. There were some touches in it. I wasn't like, ooh, Greedo, really excited about Greedo, but it was neat to see. It was neat to see Jabba the Hutt. But didn't really break any new ground. You know what I mean? It didn't stretch the envelope any.
Yeah, I actually scored lower than you.
I see that.
Yeah, not by much. And I just changed my score twice. Originally it was a 6.5, or a 6.75, and then I changed it to a 6 as you were talking, and then I thought about it, and I changed it back up to a 6.5.
Okay.
So I'm flip-flopping all over this episode. Because I really want to like this episode. I really want it to be good. It's two of my favorite Clone Wars ladies in it. So the good parts is I like seeing how much Rio has grown up since Trespass. She's not the nervous and quiet little senator she was back in season 1. And I love seeing Ahsoka struggling to use her Jedi skills because she's still learning. So that makes sense to me. I also love how active Chairman Papanoida is compared to other political figures that we've seen in the show. And that's about where it ends for me on this episode.
Yeah.
This episode is way too cram-packed with way too many characters. There's too many Nemoidians. Like, I can't... Like, there's 3 Nemoidians and they're all the same. They're all the same person, mm-hmm. pretty much. They need to focus on one plot or the other. And the men's story is really rushed, while the women's story has an insanely slow pace at times. Ion doesn't do anything but sneer and complain. That's all he does. His character could have been completely cut out of this entire episode, and he would not have been missed. So there are too many characters, there's too much going on. And I like the character parts, but I dislike the plot in this one. I almost would have liked to see Padme go with the girls.
Yeah.
That would have been fun. Girl party. I would have rather, but I do like that part with Anakin and Padme at the beginning.
I don't think they're going to send Padme anywhere it's not safe to send Padme around Nemoidians. Bad blood there.
I wonder where this stacks up against Senate Spy when she did have to deal with Lot Todd and all that. I actually kind of wonder that, because maybe this is after Sin and Spy, and she's just like, last time I was with a Nemoidian, they poisoned me, so I'm not going.
Right, they pretty consistently try to kill her.
Yeah, so I gave this one a 6.5 out of 10. Though, two things I just remembered. I like that they compared Pantora to Naboo. I like the invasion of Naboo. That was a really good kind of callback. And I kind of have to wonder about the Jedi in this one. I'm starting to not know, like, what can the Jedi get involved with and what can the Jedi not get involved with.
It's almost random, doesn't it seem like that?
It's somehow? So random. It's just like, oh, for the plot reasons and because it's convenient, the Jedi can't get involved today.
Mm-hmm.
We're busy. Call back later. And then, like, you call back, like, 20 minutes later, and they're like, we're free now.
It depends on how bored they are, right? If they're all sitting around playing, you know, hologram chess and somebody calls, it's like, all right.
Yeah, like, it's starting to get really muddled. Like, Because, like, at least with the Lermans, they flat out said, like, this is an internal affair. Like, this is their problem. And same thing with the bounty hunters. They're like, this is an internal affair between the bounty hunters and these pirates in this town. But then there's other times they're just like, this is an internal affair. And I'm like, no, it's not. This person's in the Senate. Go fucking save them. What are you doing? Pantora's clearly in the Senate. And yeah, this is between them and the Trade Federation, but you know that the Separatists are there. What are you doing? So, like, it's so random, like, when the Jedi get involved and when they don't get involved. And that's just becoming more and more blurred. And maybe that's the point.
Yeah.
That could be the point. Like, maybe Palpatine's purposely blurring this line so the Jedi can't always help. Because, like, that's what Clone Wars is. Clone Wars, a.k.a. here are 6 seasons of the downfall of the Jedi. Like, that is Clone Wars is. So maybe that's the point, that we're not always, like, maybe people are supposed to get frustrated with the Jedi just as we're getting frustrated with the Jedi.
Oh, for sure.
Because, I mean, that's what Palpatine wanted to do. He wanted to frustrate the populace with the Jedi. And so, like, when he actually kills them in Order 66, he's a hero for doing it. So maybe that's the point. But it's just getting more and more muddled, like, when the Jedi act and when they don't act, because it's random and it doesn't make sense at all. So I give the episode a 6.5 out of 10. Ooh, I think that's the most, like, I think that was the most passionate I've been about an episode in a while.
And this episode of all episodes.
I know. I love Rio. She was good. She was good the entire episode. I liked her. I love Rio. I'm tired of Ahsoka not doing things. She hasn't really done anything since Geonosis. So I guess I'm just missing Ahsoka, and I don't think that we're going to be getting her doing anything for a while, because we're about to go back to Mandalore. Actually, no, I take that back, because we have Satine and Padme next week, and then we have two Ahsoka episodes in a row, so never mind. I take that back. This is actually a very, very, very good season for Ahsoka. She has quite a few things to do. Actually, this is a very heavy Ahsoka season. I forgot about that. Maybe they were just like, oh, we should probably use her.
Yeah.
She goes to Mandalore, and then she fights...
They grow up so fast, you know.
Yeah, and then she fights Orr Sing, and then she meets some Separatists, and then we go to Mortis, and then we go to the Citadel, and then Ahsoka gets kidnapped by hunters. So this is actually a big Ahsoka season, so... Eh. So maybe they finally got in their head that, hey, we should actually use Ahsoka. Well, as always, we would always love to hear your feedback. You can leave us feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. We definitely like when you guys use iTunes, because when you rate or review the show, it helps people find the show. So I did hear that my friend Brian left us a review on iTunes today. It just takes 24 hours to get on there, so we don't have it at the time. So, Brian, we're going to read your feedback next week. But this week, we have feedback. We have feedback from our Faceback page.
Whoa. Ow. I have a Bobby out on the Faceback.
We have feedback from our Facebook page from Aaron Henley, Dave Walker, Greg Kirkman, and Robert Ward. And they're talking about our commentary from the Star Wars Holiday Special, which still hurts when I think about it. So, do you just want to take every other person?
All right, I'll start with Greg Kirkman.
Okay.
Greg Kirkman says, this should be good. Just last week, a friend came up to me with a look of anger and horror on his face. I didn't get why until he told me that he'd finally sat down and watched the Holiday Special, all caps, in its entirety. It should always be in all caps.
Yeah.
This being some months after I told him that it's a rite of passage for all true Star Wars fans. Good times.
It is a rite of passage.
I'm sure that was a sarcastic good times, too.
I don't know. I enjoyed it for however painful it was. And then Aaron Henley says, let the good times roll. This is going to be epic.
And then Robert Ward says, I plan on listening to this while watching the special for the second time, but here's a interview from a year ago after How Did This Get Made covered it. Pretty interesting if Arthur didn't already cover everything.
And he added a link to slashfills.com, which is the How Did It Get Made special. And then Dave Walker said, because we were talking about what a Wookiee Brazilian would look like. The equivalent would be of a Brazilian would be an Alderaanian, because you expect something to be there, but all that's left is an asteroid belt.
Oh, no. I thought they parted it in the middle and put buns on either side. That's what I would think an Alderaanian would be. You'd have to grow an extra long, mow down the middle and then part it backwards into buns.
Oh my god.
All right. And then Aaron Henley said, and Aaron Henley said, that is awesome. Note to self, do not eat any more cookies while reading a Dave Walker post. They can be choking hazards. Yeah, just lucky you weren't drinking milk.
All right. And
now we're at my favorite part.
Yes. And the part that I was so jealous of that I got a Butterfingers to eat while you do this.
Ooh. Oh my god. Yeah, the Butterfingers. Those are Butterfingers, one of God's candies, gifts to man. I love Butterfingers. That's
me too.
American Butterfinger. I haven't had any Fern Butterfingers, but American Butterfingers are a rich and beautiful snack. But
well, for any new listeners, what are we doing?
I am opening up a Kit Kat that was sent to us by my friend, our friend, and listener Dario Gonzalez, who travels the world getting Kit Kats after hearing me gripe about the sad state of America Kit Kats. Tonight's Kit Kat comes, as last week's did, from Francais. And this is orange-flavored Kit Kat.
Oh.
And it's, once again, it's smaller packaging in America, just two little Kit Kat bars in it.
You have to tell me it tastes like a dreamsicle.
Well, it's chocolate looking like a it looks exactly like a regular Kit Kat bar. Okay, I haven't even bit it yet. Just putting it in my mouth, I can taste the orange in my nose and mouth.
Oh my god!
So
does it taste like a dreamsicle?
No, it tastes like a regular Kit Kat with the flavor of orange zest.
You know, oh, that's so cool.
You know how you do zest, where you take the little zesting scraper thing and you scrape the skin off the orange?
Or when you get like bits of fruit and chocolate?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I love raspberry chocolate stuff. That stuff is so good. Especially like white chocolate. Oh, man.
Well, we got a raspberry Kit Kat coming up sometime in the future from China. But
cool.
This is very good. And once again, the chocolate's a little richer and creamier and more flavorful than American chocolate. That's good.
I'm enjoying my Butterfinger. Apparently I heard that Dario's going to be sending me Kit Kats.
Yes, I heard you might be getting some green tea Kit Kats. So
I need to remember to email Dario my address.
If you do, I'll save green tea. I'll save my review of the green tea Kit Kat I have here.
But Dario, you don't have to actually send me anything. When I was like griping the last 2 weeks, I was more joking than anything. But if you want to send me Kit Kats,
get those Kit Kats. No, get them.
No.
Get
I'm
that
not gonna
shit.
I'm not going to say no to free food. So
right.
So yes or no? Orange Kit Kats good from France?
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a feeling there's not going to be a negative, you know, there isn't like shrimp Kit Kats from Japan or anything like that. That might be a turnoff to me. But yeah, it's a thumbs up.
I enjoyed my Butterfinger. It was really good. I had two like little bite-sized ones, so that was good. So now that our mouths are full, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. With all the quality in quotation marks demands of podcasts, including the ever popular Back to the Bins and the ever popular Hope of All Trades, right?
I haven't put out an episode since last May, but sure, we'll go with that.
And you can go to twotruefreaks.com to see what podcasts are coming out. You can go, if you go, make friends with us on Facebook at the Two True Freaks Facebook page. You'll also see what podcasts are coming out. Go to the Cantina, then you can talk with fellow listeners and our podcasters. Are all it's just sort of our place to hang out. And we're on Twitter. Gene, the podcasting machine, runs the Two True Freaks Twitter page. I don't like the Twitter, so you won't be seeing me there that often. Every once in a while, I pop in just to figure out that I don't like it still. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. Where they can find you, Hope.
Before I say that, I just want to say something. So a lot of like Teacher Freaks listeners have tried to friend me on Facebook, and it's not that I don't like you. I just don't friend people I don't know. So until I get to know people, it's not that like I don't like people. It's just that, like, there are pictures of, like, my nieces and my nephews and stuff on my Facebook page. So if I don't friend you, it's just because I don't know you. So, like, once I get to know you better, like, through Facebook and stuff like that, or through, like, Two True Freaks, I will friend you. I just have to get to know you first. So please don't take it as, like, a slight against you. It's more of, like, my Twitter is my public account, and my Facebook is my private stuff, and that's, like, where I have, like, pictures of, like, my nieces and my nephews and stuff. So it's not against you. It's just that that's just my where all my private stuff lives. So please don't be like, oh, no, Hope hates me because she didn't friend me. No, it's just I just don't know you. So give me time to get to know you, and then we'll be friends on Facebook. But you can also find me at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter accounts. I also like to live tweet Star Wars Rebels when it's on Saturdays.
Very entertaining, I might add.
Yeah, and I also, on Tumblr, I tend to do live GIF reactions of Star Wars Rebels episodes. I've never said this. My Tumblr is geekygirlexperience.com or geekygirlexperience, I think, .tumblr.com or tumblr.geekygirlexperience. Anyway, you can also find me on Twitter at Hope Molinex. And I'm also the news writer for What the Fangirl. And that's kind of like my other job. It's a passion project of mine. Me and my friends do it. So, yeah, come see what I do over at whatthefangirl.com, where I post news bits and stuff like that. I just posted about the nominations for the Academy Awards, and Rogue One got 2 nominations for tech quality things.
That's what I figured, yeah. That's about right.
Yeah, they got nods for tech stuff. A lot of people are saying if there was one more category for best movie, Deadpool would have been in that. Because, yeah. I still haven't seen Deadpool.
You still haven't seen it?
I really want to see it. I just haven't had a chance
to see it. It's a good movie. It's not a contender for best picture.
It was nominated for the Golden Globes, and Ryan Reynolds was nominated for best actor for the Golden Globes.
It's a really good movie. I don't know. You gotta see it. It's a different kind of movie than you would think. It's kind of a date movie.
Yeah, and a lot
it's
of people
kind of
are
a romantic
saying, like,
date movie.
A lot of people compare, like, say the like redefine the superhero genre, and that's why it's so good.
It's fun. It doesn't redefine. I see. That's the thing. I don't think it really blew anything open, but it was solidly good. You know, it was. They could have played it. They were playing up the R rating, and it's definitely R rated, and it's crude and it's rude, but it's got a heart to it. You know.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah. I don't know. You should check it out. I've been thinking about watching it again. It's very entertaining. It wouldn't make my best of the year list, but it's a solid movie.
Yeah. So, I really want to see it. I just haven't had the time to sit down and do it. I have like 12 million other things to do, but I watched the entire season 9 of Hoarders on A&E, so I can't say anything.
I live the entire season 9 of Hoarders. I don't have time for that.
Yeah. Oh, man. No. That's like one of my guilty pleasure shows, man. I'm so Team Zazio. Like, she's my favorite. And I fucking love Hoarders. That's one of my favorite shows. It almost got... I can't help it. So, man, they had the most intense episode as the season finale. It was 2 hours long. And what it was that usually what they're doing is they're going into a hoard to try and save a house. It was a situation where this woman already lost the house, and the new owners technically owned the house and her hoard. Like, they owned her shit because it had new owners. And so they were pretty much just, but these owners were so nice. They were like, we're going to give her time to get her stuff out and to help with this process, because they were just, like, just really nice guys. And so what
got paid by Hoarders.
And what ended up happening was they, like, the woman just would not budge, and she just put a bunch of stuff in the street, and it ended with her only to being able to get, like, a truck's worth of stuff, because she just bought them so much. And the last shot was this dumpster, this crane came in, was just, like, picking up all her stuff and just throwing it in a dumpster.
Oh,
and it was
God.
So intense and
what a
sad.
Nightmare.
It was so sad.
What a nightmare.
I know. But then Face Off came on, and that was so much better. Face Off is another guilty pleasure of mine. It's, you actually would probably like the show. It's a movie makeup competition show. So they make like movie monsters.
I've heard of this.
It's a really good show. It's like on its like 11th season or something. It's really cool. Like the first episode, they use green screen.
Who would have thought that they could have made a show on such a nerdy premise for so many seasons? That's amazing.
They did I think like a Star Wars kind of premise where they had to make aliens in the cantina. That was a couple seasons back. That was really cool because they made like different aliens that would have been in like the Star Wars cantina. That was a really cool episode. So yeah, Face Off's another one of my guilty pleasures, and it just started last night. I love Face Off. I'm so excited. They're doing All Stars this season, so I'm really excited. All Stars.
Well, I'm just gonna end it with a public service announcement, and that hoarding is a very serious problem. But not if you're hoarding Two True Freaks podcasts on your hard drive.
Yeah, Gene. Da 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 da, Gene.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
I got it in the tip of my tongue.
Come on.
Oh, golly, I'm not even... Let me see. Oh, Alexander Dumbass. Oh, Henry Dumbass.